This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least three times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Got another Fish Fry Friday coming up this week at Queen of All Saints on Christopher Drive in South County. We've had a great time with these. I can't believe that we are on stop number four already. And Fred and Sue will be back. They're off here this week until Thursday. And then Ethan's going opening day, and he'll be back, I think, even out at the Fish Fry on Friday as well. We have Telephone Tuesday today. I'm going to take some phone calls in the next hour after Sue's news. Congressman Wagner coming up at 5:07. And then I mentioned this this story from New York, Brooklyn, actually, where a fair jumper was threatening police officers. And the way that the story was covered by the media, especially in New York City, was maybe not surprising to some of us, but pretty shocking. So we'll talk about that in the 5 o'clock hour. Plus, I will have audio cut of the day. Our legal analyst from Harris, Dow, Fisher & Young, Brad Young, back with us this afternoon. How are you, Brad?
Mark, I'm doing great, sir. Thank you.
I was looking. There's a couple of different trackers out there, and the New York Times has one where you can go and you can reference all these lawsuits that have been filed against Trump. So there's like Dellinger versus Bessent, and that's a guy named Hampton Dellinger, who is the head of a watchdog group suing for wrongful termination. You have the American Federation of Government Employees and the AFL-CIO versus the U.S. Office of Personnel Management. You have Wilcox versus Trump. You have the American Federation of Government Employees versus Trump. You have National Treasury Employees versus Vought. You have Storch versus Hegseth. I mean, and that's just like the first page. There's like 100 of these things, it seems.
Oh, there's tons of these. And listen, it's really disingenuous for anyone to say all of these lawsuits have merit or all of these lawsuits are crap. I mean, both of those positions are wrong. Just like any group of litigation, Mark, some have merit, some do not, and you have to go through and look at each individual case on the facts and the law of that case, and no one can just lump them all into one category or the other.
But how can you, you know, I look down this list, and again, I'm just scratching the surface. Some of this, you know, it's the National Association of Diversity Officers in Higher Education versus Trump. Hey, I think I'm pretty comfortable solving that one right here and now. Association of American Medical Colleges versus the National Institutes of Health. You have the mayor and city council of Baltimore versus Vought. I mean, the list goes on and on. This could drag on for a long time, which I think is part of the goal on the other side.
Oh, sure it is, because you remember during the first Trump administration, the first 2 years of that entire administration was just spent fighting this myth of Russian collusion and the Russians buying the election for Donald Trump with a $100,000 Facebook ad buy. All right. And so that really stymied and derailed the Trump administration the first time around dealing with that. So this time it's the same playbook, but Trump is not allowing himself to be distracted by all this lawfare. He's getting things done, some of which I agree with legally, some I don't. But listen, he's pushing forward and he's not getting distracted.
So when it comes to adjudication on any of those issues, would there be any expectation that some of this stuff will even be settled in the next 2 years?
Oh, I think a lot of it's going to be, frankly, dismissed.
Okay.
I mean, in fact, one of the lawsuits, the New Hampshire Indonesian Community Support versus Donald J. Trump, it's an organization with non-citizen members whose unborn children stand to have their citizenship under question. Okay, that's not going anywhere. You can't file a lawsuit on behalf of unborn children who may or may not be citizens. That's going to be dismissed. A lot of these are going to be dismissed, but those that have merit are going to move forward. On the merits, and there will be decisions here in some of these cases that Donald Trump supporters will not agree with, and others that they will, and that's why it's always difficult to look at legal analysis through the prism of politics, because you have to analyze it on the merits of the case.
So let's go back a couple of years, because I know you and I talked about this at the time. New York passes this law to allow non-citizens to vote in city elections. And to most of us who are sane, that's crazy. That is insanity, right? But apparently the people in New York think it's a good idea. But of course, that's challenged in the courts. And lo and behold, the New York Court of Appeals has ruled that that law is a violation of the state constitution, which I think a lot of us thought to begin with. But it was a 6-1 ruling. Who's the bonehead that ruled against it?
Well, one of the progressives. But listen, the majority of the New York Supreme Court, in fact, it's not technically called the Supreme Court. In New York, they're so messed up, they call their district courts the Supreme Court.
Oh, yeah.
But in this instance, the High Court in New York, most of the progressives on there voted to strike this down. And it's very simple. It's very simple. Under the New York Constitution, it specifically states that every citizen shall be entitled to vote in every election, unquote. So if you're not a citizen under the state constitution, you can't vote. It's not that hard. And yet this shows you what the progressive left wants to do, because this would have allowed 800,000 people to vote in municipal contests such as mayoral races when they're not even citizens of this country. I mean, go to France and try to vote in a French election if you're not a citizen. Go to Canada.
I know.
They don't allow that nonsense.
Why would
they? Those places are progressive.
It's insane. Look, Eric Adams was a little tricky on this, as you know. He didn't sign the bill, but he didn't veto it. So that meant that it went into law in 2022. And at the time, I don't know if he's flipped around on this a little bit, Brad, or not, but he did express support, and he said New Yorkers should have a say in their government. Well, how about New Yorkers who are legally in this country should have a say in their government? We can all get on that same page.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was disappointed in him. But I think right now, Eric Adams has learned that the progressive left is not his friend, and they're not there to help him. And I think a 2025 version of Eric Adams would have vetoed that law. But listen, we can't go back in time. If we could, you know, I'd do something about my hairline.
And I do something about the Mizzou basketball finish to the season. There's no doubt about that. All right, let's talk about a couple other issues, including the bankruptcy of 23andMe. And this is a little unique because I'm a 23andMe person. I sent my DNA in many years ago just to kind of see if there were any matches or stuff like that. So the question now becomes, will private data that was shared by, you know, us and a lot of people around the world with 23andMe perhaps be in jeopardy?
Yes. Not perhaps, it will be.
Great.
There's no question. I mean, that's why I've been for years a vocal opponent of 23andMe. And let me give you a great example. There have been multiple murders solved, and someone say, what's the problem with this? But we even look at the most recent example with the guy in the Idaho college murders. He was found because they obtained DNA.
Right.
The government agencies utilized commercial services. They never disclosed which one, but it was either 23andMe or one just like it, to find relatives that fit that DNA profile match. Then they go to the house, they collect their own DNA, and boom, it matches. So literally, anytime you give up your DNA, and let me kind of explain the background and then the legality of the bankruptcy. Anytime you give up your DNA to these agencies or companies, then basically you are ratting out your relatives. Even if it's not your direct relatives, you're ratting out your genetic relatives when it comes to any potential criminal activity. Now, let's look at the legal side. When you, Mark, signed up for 23andMe, they promised to keep your data safe and secure and not to transfer it to any third party. However, in the terms of service that you signed, probably didn't read it,
of course,
but in the terms of service you signed, it gave a loophole to 23andMe. And it said if at any time 23andMe goes out of business, they retain the right to sell your private data to any third party in the course of bankruptcy. Well, guess what?
Yeah,
they're in bankruptcy right now.
And by the way, they filed it here in Missouri, right?
What's that?
They filed it here in Missouri.
Yeah, and I'm not sure of what the benefit is to doing that. Most of the time, you see those types of corporate bankruptcies being filed in Delaware. So I haven't researched why they filed it in Missouri. But the bottom line is that anyone, including Mark Reardon, who gave their information, their most private, secure personal data, your DNA, to these companies like 23andMe, it's now going to go into the wind whenever they sell it to a third party.
Okay, I might not be a big fan of that, but let's go back to the whole ratting out your relatives thing. I don't know that I have as big of an issue with that as you do, because I'm trying to think through the process here. But, you know, when I think the reason that a lot of people go out there with 23andMe, well, there's a couple of reasons. They can break down the DNA from a health perspective, which, by the way, I chickened out on. I didn't want to know if I'm going to die, you know, at the age of 70. I just kind of let that out there and someone else can figure that out. But on the topic of just seeing if there's a match out there for someone in the past, you kind of assume that some of this stuff might be shared in that particular manner. So I don't really have an issue. Why should I have an issue if they go out there and say, okay, now we think that, you know, Mark's son is a murderer, so we have to see if there's a DNA match. Just for privacy.
Two reasons. No, two reasons why that should be troubling to you. Number one, you haven't given consent.
Okay.
All right. If someone comes to me and says, Brad, we think your sister committed a crime, I get to make the decision. Do I want to testify against her or not? I get to make that decision. In this instance, that decision's already been made for you because you gave up your DNA.
Right.
Secondly, if we look at the college murders case, let's change the facts a little bit. All right. You've only seen it used in cases where it actually solidified a conviction of a heinous crime. But what if again, we change the facts a little bit, and it turns out that this guy in Utah really didn't commit this crime, but he was being framed because of the DNA that you gave up to 23andMe. At that point, you couldn't go and say, whoa, don't try to frame my relative with fake information or incorrect information, because again, that has been taken out of your hands, so to speak, and you don't have any say in how it's used.
I understand the privacy issues. I'll have to think through that one just a little more, because that is a tricky issue. By the way, on the topic of, you know, a lot of this, not necessarily DNA, I mentioned this yesterday and I finished the documentary. Are you familiar at all, or have you gone down this Karen Reed trial rabbit hole from Boston?
I have not. I mean, I'm vaguely familiar with it just from reading the news, but I've not dove into it very deeply.
Just to kind of summarize it, there was a Boston cop who was found dead in the snow on the early morning. I think it was January 29th, a few years ago. It was during the winter. There was a blizzard. They were all out partying, a big group of people. And then they said, hey, let's go to this friend's house. And that's where something bad happened. The question that's addressed in the film and the documentary is, did this woman, Karen Reed, who was the boyfriend of Michael O'Keefe, the cop, did she run him over with her car? Did she murder him? Was it an accident? Does she even remember what happened, because there was a lot of alcohol involved? But then the question is, the defense puts this in a different, you know, perspective. Hey, these people inside the house, they did some funny business too. What was going on? There were a bunch of butt dials at 2 a.m, all this stuff back and forth. And it leads you down this path of not really knowing, you know, what the truth is in this particular case. And this has torn apart this community out there in Boston. It's been, you know, a big media event. But I will say this, Brad, it's a good documentary from the standpoint that it's entertaining, but I always go back to Making a Murderer, which is about Stephen Avery in Wisconsin, and I was very familiar with that case, and I have friends that covered that from the start to the finish, and that particular documentary did lead the audience down a path where you thought maybe Stephen Avery was not guilty. I can guarantee you one thing, he's guilty as hell. So in this particular case, you're not sitting through the whole trial, so do you have all the facts? It's good TV.
Exactly.
It's good TV, but is it good? You know, is it accurate? That I don't know at this point, but it's worth a watch.
I can tell you it isn't, because for two reasons. Number one is when a case goes to trial, there are enormous limitations on what the jury gets to see and what they don't get to see. That's obviously out the window in a documentary. Secondly, the documentary is done to convince the watcher, the listener of the documentary, of a specific point of view. In a trial, you get both sides, and so you're missing that in a documentary.
I would say in the Stephen Avery documentary, absolutely. In this one, I will say this. I think they did a pretty good job. They feature members of this guy's family. It's relatively well-balanced. Look, it's about this woman, so is it tipped in her direction because she's the star, Karen Reed? And by the way, they have all these people that follow her around. They're fans of hers. The whole thing is creepy. But I thought, in the end, the documentarians did a pretty good job of you know, casting questions, aspersion to some of the theories from the defense. So it's compelling. It's worth a look for sure.
I know, but look at the Menendez brothers situation. I mean, the only reason they were getting this so-called second shot at freedom is because of the Netflix documentary,
right,
which was clearly one-sided. It didn't demonstrate the evidence like you would in a court of trial, in a court of law. And really, it completely overshadowed the idea that even though they claimed their defense was based upon molestation by the father, they still killed the mother.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no allegation that the mother killed him, that the mother molested them, rather, and yet they still killed the mother. So I just have a problem with all of these true crime types of documentaries, and I think we should just leave it up to Only Murders in the Building.
Just Sue would support you on that. By the way, just to be clear on the Netflix thing, that was an episodic drama about the Menendez. However, there were other documentaries that were, you know, along those same lines for sure. All right, Brad Young, I appreciate it. You got to swing by one of our fish fries here coming up.
Yeah, I will. I'll connect with Hall of Famer Fred Bottenheimer and see when I can swing by.
Yeah, he is back in town in a couple of days. And
how about old Fred Bottenheimer over there, ladies and gentlemen?
There you go. There's Kenny Wallace. Thank you, Brad. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
All right, we'll see you soon. 3:42. We'll take a break. We're coming back. I got a real interesting little piece and some stats that might shock you about white authors and their success out there in the book business. A little shocking, maybe not. We'll get to it coming up.
Traffic from the 97.1 FM Talk Traffic Center.
All right, we've got 170 big time delays southbound, pretty heavy from Page down to Forest Park Parkway. Roughly, there's a crash in a lane there. Northbound side's hanging in there okay. 270, your northbound side from Manchester to 64, a little slow. Southbound from Page down to 64. If you have 44 on your westbound side, heavy from about 70 to 77th Street. And then we've got 55 southbound delays. Broadway down to Bates, gotten kind of heavy through that work zone. 64 eastbound side, slow from Mason to 270, but westbound slow spots from Kings Highway to past Lindbergh. Then you're really jammed from Highway K, just past Highway K to past Lake St. Louis Boulevard. We still have that police activity hanging out in the right lane there. I'm Trent Erickson with traffic on 97.1 FM Talk.
O'Reilly Veriscan is a free check engine light testing program that pulls from over 600 million vehicle scans confirmed by ASE certified technicians to provide a simple report and possible fixes. Available exclusively at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I want to talk about Susan L. Ward. She is a family practice attorney here in St. Louis. And, you know, they even have a section on the website at slfamilylaw.com where they kind of go through some tips on how you should choose your attorney and what factors are the most important part in choosing a lawyer. Well, you have to have confidence in their experience, their responsiveness, their compatibility, the style, negotiating skills, reputation, and, of course, fees play into this as well. And I think you're going to find when it comes to Susan and assessing her in all the those areas, you'll be very comfortable. The website has really a lot of information, even some suggestions on how you should, you know, choose your lawyer, how you should be represented by a lawyer. They have a great, you know, if you will, tutorial up there about some of the things that they do. And in the practice areas, you'll find that they handle everything from divorce, anything related to kids, domestic partnerships, post-divorce issues that could mean modifications to existing orders, child support. And they also handle domestic violence cases as well. You can always reach Susan and the team at 314-783-9400. And I mentioned that website, which has everything that you can need, even a confidential consultation form, stlfamilylaw.com, stlfamilylaw.com. The focus on family law, the emphasis on you, Susan L. Ward.